All right, so this is the next edition, the current edition, I guess, if you're listening to it, of the Immersive Irony Podcast on Parkscope.net. I am Alan Conceição at Gods on Safari on Twitter, and I'm joined today by a good friend of mine for many, many years, currently involved in the touring memorial, The Eyes of Freedom. But in the past, he was the American Coaster Enthusiast PR Director. Were you like the Northern Ohio rep as well, or?
I was the Southern Ohio rep from, I think, late 98 until 2002.
So you were also an Ohio rep for ACE.
Yeah.
You've been in this for a long time. We've known each other for a billion years, just like people have on. Sean Flaherty, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you, buddy?
I'm alive.
I'm alive too. No complaints, man.
So we'll start with the part that probably most people who are going to see the podcast description are going to be like, oh, that sounds interesting. Mystic Timbers.
Yes.
You were at the media day.
I was.
And got a few rides in and then brought your camcorder around to ask people about the shed.
Yes. You saw this.
YouTube channel. Okay. Plug for that, youtube.com/Sean Flaherty. Spell that for everyone.
S-E-A-N-F-L-A-H-A-R-T-Y.
I didn't really forget it.
I screw your last name up all the time. I say it probably three different ways, so I understand.
So you got a bunch of rides on that. What are your thoughts about the ride?
It's amazing. It's someone on the video actually said it best, and it's like Beast's evil nephew or something like that.
Yeah.
It's if you've ridden Prowler in Kansas City at Worlds of Fun, you kind of have somewhat of an idea of what it's like, but it's just completely out of control from the top of the lift to the final brakes. It doesn't let up the entire time. My first several rides were in complete darkness, which was cool because I had to be at the park so early. And it's amazing. It's smooth. It's fast. The trains are awesome looking. They look aged, and they have a pickup truck front. But the layout's amazing. It's going to do very well at that park. The queue's awesome. The lift hill's a bit odd because it's timed in segments to the sound effects on the lift hill. There's, to get you into the theme of the ride. And it works out really well. I was very, very, very surprised at how good the ride is, which I shouldn't be because all GCIs are really pretty good, decent rides.
Yeah, but, it's first of all, I'm kind of surprised they did as much as they did in terms of theming.
Yeah, they did a good job with that. Like, when you're in the queue, they have these TVs that show random footage of people walking in the woods looking for this thing, and the line was moving so fast I didn't really get to stop and watch the whole thing. I'll be going back Sunday, possibly. Maybe, I'll get a chance to actually, take everything in for the story.
Did you, it runs three trains?
Yeah, it does. The media day only had two going.
Okay. So, as far as the rides go, I mean, it's a GCI. One of the knocks against GCI coasters, wood coasters, has historically been that they just kind of do really fast airtime and turns. Does this do a little bit more sustained airtime?
I mean, there's some standard, if you want to call them standard hills, like parabolic hills. There's only a couple of those. But there's my first ride on it, even after watching the POV and thinking I understood the layout, there was a couple really fast, uphill then left right jolts that you don't see in the darkness that really caught me off surprise, and we were laughing, like I was when I first started this hobby many, many moons ago. But it was it really, really surprised the heck out of me. And there's a couple enthusiasts there. I wouldn't really call them jaded, but they don't really show a lot of emotion when it comes to new rides, and they were just floored by the ride experience. And it was cold. And if it's running like that when it's cold, I can't imagine what it's gonna be like on a summer evening.
Yeah. The only downside is because it's new, mm-hmm. to get there in a summer evening and not have a huge wait.
Yeah, I know. You're going to be waiting for it. I've heard and I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard the wait on the Friday after media day was 4 hours or three Whoa. Hours. And then on the weekends, it's been about 1 to 2 hours. But I think it's worth it to try something this part of the country really hasn't had. I mean, there's Weatherwood coasters at Kings Island, but in the surrounding areas, but there's nothing this out of control as far as a wood coaster goes. And it's right next to Beast. So once you get off that, you can head right over to Beast and ride it.
So is the station, in my mind, the station was over by like the rapids ride and the log flume. So it's further back.
Yeah. When you're in the station and you climb up the steps, and before you get into the station, if you turn back and look, the log flume's right there.
Okay.
It's right there. You know, and the entrance to the River Rapids ride is now back where the Tomb Raider of the ride used to be. And you can walk back there and watch the coaster go overhead. It's pretty cool.
All right. So obviously you did the media day. Prior to the media day, the day before the media day, you were flying home from a tour in California. Yep. Give a quick description of what you do.
I am actually, my official title, even though I do a lot more than this, is Logistics Director of the Eyes of Freedom. And it's a traveling exhibit that not only pays tribute to 22 Marines and one Navy Corpsman. These men were killed in Iraq in 2005. And the unit itself was based out of Columbus here, where I live. And my friend, Justin Hoffman, was the first Marine part of this exhibit. And the exhibit itself is 8 9-foot tall panels, and they contain all the images of the fallen from Lima Company. And I got involved because it's kind of a long story, but I won't bore everybody with the whole details of the story. But when I went to my friend Justin's funeral on August 13, 2005, I knew that my life was going to change in a way that I had never experienced before. And I made a memorial video for Justin. And I don't know how long after I made that video, this is even before YouTube existed. I think it was Google Video or something like that back then. And I went to Google it the next morning to see if it showed up, and my video didn't show up in the search results. This woman's blog showed up, and her name was Anita Miller, and she was the one that ended up painting the exhibit. And I got involved right before she painted, documented the whole process, and now it's my job. I travel the country with it, with a Marine named Mike Straley, who actually served with those guys, was on one of the vehicles that exploded. So we have two different angles, viewpoints, while we travel, and that's what I was doing.
So I kind of like to discuss some of the logistics and like operational type stuff when I have people on, because I think it's fascinating to me.
Sure.
For you guys doing a memorial, a lot of people see memorials and see traveling memorials and don't really think about like, okay, how does this go from town to town?
Yeah.
Is there like a business model that's involved? It's obviously nonprofit.
Yeah, we're a nonprofit organization. We only have two full-time employees, myself and Mike. R&L Carriers, our transportation provider, has just bent over backwards, you know, taking it everywhere. We get asked to take it. They made us, we got a new truck from Wabash International. And we just make it happen. I mean, there's no real textbook of how to learn something like this. You got to go, you learn as you go. And this is the first kind of full year we have this kind of model. We have we actually have a part-time office assistant in Colorado, office manager. And we now, like, if someone asks us, hey, I want to bring this to my town, previously it used to be we would just go and worry about the cost and everything as we were planning. And then we weren't thinking smart, because we would go, well, let's go to Montana for a week. And then we'd come back to Ohio. And then we get another request. Well, let's go to Texas for a week. And for whatever reason, I don't know if we're just not smart, we're like, well, why don't we just start touring and hitting these spots all in one thing? So when someone requests us, we now on our website have a application they can fill out that gets forwarded to me. And then I share it with our board of directors and everything. And then if it's a faraway location like Wyoming or something like that, we'll say, well, we could go, but we're going to hit it with other stuff, you know, along the way. And now we're in a position that the way that the word has been spreading, it's just been absolutely insane. We have the ability to say, okay, well, yeah, we may hold you off for 6 months until we get something else in your area or on the way out there, but it works. And California was a perfect example. I was out there for almost a month and a half, and the first stop we did was a summit of all these colleges with all these schools that have veteran service programs, and they all wanted us. So next year, we have enough interest to do a 2-month tour. And now on our way out there, we'll probably hit some stuff, and on our way back, we'll probably hit some stuff. So it's a lot of work, and when we show up to towns, a lot of people think we have the staff of 100 people because we're constantly working. I mean, that's all I've been doing all day is doing a lot of, you know, kind of PR stuff with our newsletter and vlogging and things like that, and video and pictures, the whole thing. So Yeah, it keeps me busy. Quite honestly, if you would have asked me 10 years ago, you're going to quit your job at Nationwide Insurance after being there for 15 years to take art on the road full time, I would have probably thought you were drunk or something. But you know, Jeff Johnson, a mutual friend that we have, you and I and him did Tijuana on a rather crazy trip many years ago.
Yes, yes. Among other things, but that one's the
among other things. And he was the first enthusiast friend. Like, I thought the coaster world, I was like, somehow this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to be this coaster person. I'm supposed to travel the world riding roller coasters. And then this enters my life. And Jeff was the first enthusiast that I was, I remember very clearly, I was in O'Hare Airport in Chicago. We were flying, we had a layover in to go to Minneapolis for what else, a coaster trip. And I told him what I was involved in, and he stopped me and looked at me, and he said, "You don't know it yet, but this is the most passionate thing you've ever been part of. I've never seen you like this." I mean, to get me off my little high horse on the coaster thing had to be something big, and this was it. And it just, without sounding tacky or any of that stuff, I really don't think I had a choice. If I would have said no, it would have entered my life some other way. So that's how stuff works a lot of times.
So just going back really quickly with how you guys do like the business side. So is there a fee that you guys charge that's flat, or is it like?
Yes. Yes. And that's something new. We just started incorporating. We used to base our fee on distance, how far it was from Ohio, length of stay, how many hours, stuff like that. And now we've talked to other traveling exhibits, like the traveling Vietnam Wall, the different versions of that and some other things, to try to get an idea of something we could do. So we have actually two versions. We have the original ones that you've seen that are 9 feet tall or 8.5 feet tall. And then we have R&L made us these outdoor aluminum ones that are 6 feet tall. And we can do this for outdoor events like festivals and stuff like that. And they have two different costs. But when they approach us, we're very upfront in saying, okay, for your event, for this full size one, your event can last anywhere between 1 or 2 days to 7 days. It's going to be the same cost. And on top of that cost, we now have a travel fee for airfare and like hotels. Now that travel fee can be admitted or considerably go down if they donate the rooms to us, stuff like that. So we just make it work. So, I mean, obviously hotels are a big chunk of our travel fee. And you know how hotels are with traveling so much, as you still do, you know. But we want it to be a fair, I mean, everybody says the wall itself, the largest version of traveling wall is really expensive to bring in town. And we know what we offer is just as powerful, if not even more powerful, and it's cheaper. So we make it work, but all those details and things, they're just built into the application, you know. And if we get somebody that says, well, my little town or my school can't afford that, we have tools to give them to reach out to the community, the sponsors, to get it sponsored. And then it always works. We've never had an instance where we're like, well, we can't do it because, you know. Yeah, there's events we've done where we were like, well, why are we here again? You know, but there's always, having said that, there's always one moment at every single event where it proves why we were there. So I call it the needle in the haystack. But I don't know if that answered your question or not.
No, absolutely. I think it's something nobody talks about, this kind of stuff. Like,
they don't know.
Yeah, they have no idea. It appears.
Well, and you brought up a very good point, because we still get calls. We'll get a call, I'm sure, Memorial Day coming up. And we're booked about a year, maybe 2 years in advance for those days, like the 4th of July weekend, Memorial Day and Veterans Day week. Those fill up really quick because of what we do. But you would be surprised. I'll get a call like in, I don't know, South Dakota, okay, 2 days before Memorial Day. And they'll say, we want you guys out here. and then we'll say, well, we're already booked. And, well, we heard you do it for free. Or do you guys just show up? Are you constantly just roaming around the country looking for places, like some gypsy outfit or something, you know? We're like, no. so I think that for people that don't understand the work behind the scenes, The actual payoff in my mind is actually having it on display, because it's a lot of work to get something just to go to one place. And we do about 30 events a year now. And now we're incorporating time off at these places so we can actually go see things, which is a big plus, because you need, whether we want to admit it or not, what we do is emotionally very taxing. And it's like kind of working in the funeral industry, I think, with all those, you know, you see sadness a lot, but you see a lot of positive stuff. So as long as you take care of yourself, you're good. But yeah, the people sometimes think we're just waiting by the phone. Early on when we first started traveling, yes, that was how it was. Like, oh, who's going to call this week? And now it's, we have to have a schedule, and we have to, we thought about actually making tour shirts, like at a concert. Advance, so.
The summer 2017.
Yeah.
Eyes of Freedom tour.
We recently did this video based on Forrest Gump called Freedom Gump. And at the end, we put like a tour schedule in the credits. And well, that tour schedule has since been altered since we put that video. So anybody, we encourage everybody to go to our website, eyesoffreedom.org, to look at updates and stuff like that. Because dates can change that are out of our control. You know, things happen. And that's the bad side about doing things, that you kind of have to always just be on all the time and be ready for every change, because there's no such thing as a perfect thing, perfect world. So.
You did not go to college for communications.
I did not.
I didn't go to college at all. Yeah.
I was going to go to film school because I wanted to be like John Carpenter. Like, I wanted to be that. And then music, I got into music. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be in a rock band and all this stuff.
You're in a band.
I was in bands and stuff, but I was always confused. I always felt like I was on a rut. And this is the first thing I've ever been part of. I was like, oh, now I'm on the paved road. I get it. Okay. But no, I got into communications. I mean, again, I've been very, very fortunate. I've had so much stuff happen to me just by being in the right place at the right time. And I've stopped trying to figure it out, and I just go with it, because it used to like kind of alarm me, quite honestly. But I got asked to be a regional rep for ACE. The American Coaster Enthusiast in 98, because the regional rep, they were dividing Ohio into halves, and they asked me, hey, you know, do you want to do this? And I said, oh, I'll give it a shot. And I liked it. You know, I had to be in charge of getting riders for media day and shoots and all that stuff. And then in the beginning of 2002, I get a call from the president at the time of the club and said, hey, we saw you doing these play by plays on these Discovery Channel shows and things. And would you ever consider doing PR for ACE? Because the PR director for ACE at the time was leaving. And I said, I don't mind doing the camera stuff, but I don't know. You know, I mean, I deal with parks and their marketing team, but I'd have to think about it. And they wanted actually me originally to do regional rep and PR director. And I said, no, thank you. And they talked me into doing it. Because they said half of the job is writing, and then half of the job is doing appearances, you know, on camera and stuff. And I said, oh, I think I can do that, because I love to talk about roller coasters. I still write for European Coaster Clubs magazine. I'm probably going to send pictures of Mystic Timbers to ACES magazine, Roller Coaster. And all of a sudden, here I was for 2 years, the PR guy. And I was like, okay. And because I did that, it gave me confidence that if I was ever asked or something fell in my lap again, I would do it. And that's exactly kind of what I ended up doing with this. So it's kind of strange, but.
You had a trial by fire with ACE.
I did. Yeah, I did. I was the PR director in the absolute worst time in our history. And
so we might as well talk about this. Because
sure. I have no problem.
I don't know how many people have heard this story, especially from you.
Okay.
As to what the deal is and what we're even talking about.
Okay, and it's a bit of a dark thing. Actually, it's probably the darkest thing, one of the darkest things I've ever gone through, but in a good way, I've learned from this. And so I was the PR director from 2002 to 2004. And in the middle of that, you're talking about Holiday World, right?
Of course I am.
Okay. So Holiday World... has this annual coaster event for coaster geeks like Alan and I that we're going to attend this year.
That's right. Yes.
It was called Star Craven Mad back in the day. And I think the first night it went fine. It's a two-night event, and we have something called ERT, Exclusive Ride Time. You coaster fans out there know exactly what I'm talking about. And on the second night, they make all of us go into a picnic shelter so they can clear the park from the general public. Once the general public's clear, we get the park for what, like 3 or 4 hours riding in the night. It's pure bliss. It's amazing. And as we were in the picnic shelter, word came through that someone was ejected off of a ride. They were thrown off of Raven. And nobody really knew the details. They didn't know if it was a ride malfunction. There was all these questions, but they canceled the event. And as I'm walking out, I was asked by the park, can you help us stay and help us write a press release? And we know that this person is one of your own. They're in your club. And I'm just like, oh my God, you know, who is it? Because we know a lot of people in this club. But it ended up being this woman. It was her, basically one of their first coaster trips, her and her fiance. And on the last ride of the general public of the night on Raven, they were sitting in the back and she messed with her restraint somehow and stood up and was ejected off the ride and died. And I was at that park until probably, I would say, maybe 4 a.m. working with the late Will Cook and Paula and her team on coming up with a press release. And then the fiance came back and we talked with him and he was in shock. It was just a really, really surreal thing. And then when I got home the next day, I had to get permission from Will to actually leave because he thought he might need me the next day because they had closed the park that day, the next day. And once he gave me the okay to go, I came home and I remember calling my connections at Cedar Point, Kings Island. And I remember the park, Holiday World, telling me, we're going to have to give your number and your information to the news outlets. And I said, go ahead. So I called these my connections at Kings Island and Cedar Point and said, hey, give me some tips here. You know, I'm about to get flooded with calls and I don't know really what to do. And what shocked me is they both told me, yeah, we've never really had to go through with this. You know, just stay strong, stay with the facts. You'll do fine. And I took the next day off work, and between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m., I got called 47 calls. I got called 47 times that day from so many media outlets across the country. And it was pretty damn, I'll just say I learned so much. And to this day, like if I go to Holiday World, as a matter of fact, last year I was there and Paula Wernie and I were walking around the park and she was kind of reintroducing me to the team. And she said, you know, Sean was with us that dark night and all that stuff. But people still come up to me because you can still to this day Google my name. And my name is tied to media articles regarding that. And people always come up and say, oh, we're so sorry. You know, you go through that. But they don't need to do that. I mean, it was part of the gig, you know. As a matter of fact, I don't know if I told you this. When Bill Linkenheimer, the president of ACE, asked me to do it, I think the first thing I said to him is, what happens if we lose a member at an event? And he says, that's never happened in history. You don't have to ever worry about that. So I was like, oh, okay. I don't know why it was on my mind. But and then that year, there was other deaths in amusement parks. So, of course, they would call me. And I have no comment. But
yeah,
it was something that was very unfortunate. But I think, personally, I grew out of it. And I learned a lot about the industry. At IAPA that year, I don't remember who it was. It might've been Jeff Siebert at Kings Island. They had a workshop for, some sort of, you know, if something bad happens to your park with all these PR people from parks and he was going to bring me into that to share my story, but I was too busy with ACE stuff at the show. So I wasn't able to attend, but yeah, it was a crazy experience, but I mean, stuff, you know, you learn from things like that. And, yeah. and it was pretty soon after, at least I knew I wasn't going to be the PR guy much longer after that. Not because I wasn't doing a good job or anything like that. It was just more or less that I didn't want to go through that hassle again because it kind of bugged me out for a while. I didn't go to a park for a while, I think, after that. I certainly, I didn't go to Holiday World. And then when I did the following year, Paula is the one that actually told me that what made her mind at ease is she actually rode the coaster again. And so I rode in the same seat and probably shouted some things I probably shouldn't have while I was riding, but just to make sense of all of it. And it actually helped me. That one ride helped me. And I was like, okay, I can come back to Holiday World and not look at this as a bad place because it's an awesome place.
Yeah, no, it's a great park. I mean, the wood coasters there are.
Yeah, and it's the friendliest park you'll ever go to. I mean, I just spent time at Magic Mountain, and no offense to Magic Mountain fans, but, you know, you go to that place, and if you go to Holiday World, you can learn a lot. A lot. So,
how did you perceive the changes to sort of the coaster fandom or coaster enthusiast world following that event? Like, I mean, aside from the obvious thing, like, you know, also old timers, and I hate to call myself an old timer,
but
I remember like two click rides and fully loose.
Yeah, the stuff like that doesn't really go far. I mean, everybody, I didn't do Holiday World, took a year off from coaster events, and then they came back with Hollywood Nights. I didn't want to go to that one. And the security was so incredibly strict. There were some people that I was coming back from seeing Porcupine Tree in Cleveland the night that the event was. And I remember getting a call from a couple of enthusiasts. I got kicked out of the park because the park thought they were doing, they were either like they smelled alcohol in their breath or, you know, the park obviously had to kind of look at us with a microscope and say, do we really want to continue this? And I know there was some people that were just like, this is ridiculous, you know, this was one bad apple, but if you know the damage that that bad apple did to that park for, PR reasons, they wouldn't be questioning that. So it definitely made everybody safer. People seem to be a little bit more relaxed. And I mean, when you and I were in the midst of all this enthusiast stuff, I mean, it's no secret that people took this stuff really, really to the extreme. And I don't mean just the writing aspect. I meant kind of the attitudes and, I don't even know, you know what I'm talking about. I don't know the words of it. It was just, it was a different world. And now you look at it now and you're like, God, they allowed cameras on rides. I mean, parks still do.
It's funny. Like when I see so many people online talk about how terrible it is. Like, oh, I saw someone with their cell phone out on a coaster.
Yeah.
And I think about when we did ECO, the European coaster trip.
Yeah.
And we brought cameras on every
ride. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, it could be anything. It could be ridiculous stuff. People are bringing like huge camcorders.
I mean,
the reason we have POV footage from the 80s is because guys would take huge camcorders with a VHS.
I totally was that guy.
Yeah, under like really big rides. And I mean, like, how did you get it?
Well, there was, and then it's definitely made me more safe to con- if a park allows POV, like Busch Gardens and SeaWorld, if you have a GoPro attached to you now, they allow you to shoot as much video as you want. That's awesome. I love that. I love video. I'm a very visual guy when it comes to that stuff. But I was on Diamondback at Kings Island the year it opened in 2009. I'm in the back row, and we're going over the first drop, and I see something hurling toward my face from the front of the train, and I block my face because I think it's going to hit me in the head, and I catch someone's cell phone. I held on to it. And then when we hit the brakes, there's this teenage kid up in the front row, and he's like, my mom's going to kill me. I lost another phone. And so I gave him the phone back. He gave me a big hug. And I was like, wow, you know, I almost got hit. Then last year I'm riding it, and this guy in front of me, his water bottle just comes out of his open pocket. And we're going over one of the parabolic hills, and it just floats right in front of me. And my friend Morgan and I both grab for it, and I actually grab it. And at the end of the ride, I handed it back to him. So thank God for zero G. But it's the thing that's kind of scares me the most is the people that are careless on rides don't have any idea of what a ride can do. It can blind you. I mean, the reason Dueling Dragons doesn't duel anymore is because of a loose item, you know, or many of them. I don't know. They just don't seem to care and realize, well, it's my phone. I'm going to hold on to it. But if you would go walk underneath those rides and see the stuff that they find under there, and most of that stuff probably hit people in the face, you know, or hit them somewhere, and just be smart about it. If it's not attached to you, or if it's zipped up and it's not going to fly anywhere, that's fine. But I think parks like Universal And now from what I'm hearing, Great Adventure, where they won't let you even take your wallet in line for a ride or wherever that park is, you know, that might be a little bit extreme. I think if it's zipped up, it's fine, but it can be a hassle. But if that's the way it's going to happen in the future, then that's what we have to be prepared for, because it's stupid people. Well, Dave Althoff had a signature back in the Rec Roller Coaster days. It said, respect rides because they don't respect you.
Yeah.
That pretty much sums it up.
It's kind of like, because we were doing these things that were super nerdy, like videotaping POV on rides, like we cared whether or not the camera came back with us.
I know.
And yeah. So maybe that's the reason why none of us seem to lose huge expensive things. And
yeah.
and now like every kid has a supercomputer in their pocket. And so it's kind of like, oh, whatever, I'll just get another one for $20.
Yeah, I mean, people are taking the phone thing a little bit too serious. I know phone cameras have just gone. I mean, I just bought a brand new Sony A7S2 DSLR, and the images I can get for that are amazing, and it shoots in 4K and stuff like that. But there's still people out there. It was like, well, I have a 4K camera too, and it does just as good video, you know. And no. You know, there's a whole different world that has to be learned and stuff like that. It's getting better and better. But I mean, back then, you know, we didn't even think about things falling out in rides.
No,
it just didn't. You just didn't hear about it. You know, I was at Jazzland in 2001, 2002, maybe in New Orleans. And they made us take our stuff on the ride. Okay. That's how I got all this amazing POV, even the shot towers, the sky coaster. I put my camera in the little thing and they're like, it'd be good if you hold on to that. And I said, am I allowed to shoot video? And they're like, yeah, but if the camera doesn't come back, it's your fault. So I was like, well, I can do that. And I got all this amazing video that nowadays you would never even think about it, you know?
Right.
But yeah, POV like on YouTube is just out of control. I mean, I've seen some people kind of, there was a guy again on Diamondback, they had this big camera, like a vlogging camera, shooting his girl's first ride. So I made the nice comment to him up the lift hill, hey, you're going to lose your camera. Can you just secure it? And he basically turned around and told me to mind my own business in a really rude way. So he was focused on his little girl riding, going up these hills. So I said, okay, if you're going to disrespect me, I'm going to disrespect you. If I get hit with that camera, you know, bad things will happen. But so instead of shouting back at him, I did the one thing that I probably shouldn't have, but I just screamed F-bombs the rest of the ride because he wasn't paying attention, knowing that when he would get home, he would be get the whole family come around the computer, the TV, look at little Ellison's first ride, and all you're going to hear is somebody yelling the F word. Bring it on! That's something you would do too, you know it.
Yeah, it's very likely that I would do quite something along those lines.
Yeah, you totally.
We talk about video now. Correct me if I'm wrong. You've pretty much lived in the same house your whole life, right?
Well, on and off. I mean, this house I grew up in. I was born in Columbus, Ohio. My family and I lived in Springfield, Ohio, until I was 4. But I bought this house from my mom and my dad.
It was like 10, 12.
Oh, no, it's longer than that. It was probably
was it around 03?
15 years ago.
Yeah.
It was just something that I'm like, you know, I'm not, well, especially with what I do now, it's our headquarters.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a room that you can't see back there. That's just archives. I went through it the other night. I got delivered yesterday a 350-pound dog tag stamping machine that we acquired in California. You better see my garage now. It's filled with merchandise too. So, I mean, I was looking at possibly at one time moving to Orlando or California or something like that. And every time, damn it, that I think I have this path of, okay, I'm supposed to go this way, something just goes, boom, nope. Here, you will stay here. You know, you've stayed with me dozens of times. I think even the last time you were here, after I bought the house for my parents, my mom lived here for like another year before she was going to retire to Phoenix. And my brother had his first kid. And she wanted to be a grandma around here. So she got an apartment that's maybe, she still lives there maybe 15 minutes from me.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, yep, this is my place.
So you've had this house, and basically the reason why I mentioned this is you've had most of your life videotaped.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of stuff that you videotaped.
Since I was 12.
Yeah.
And I'm 45 now. my very first video. Okay. So I remember this very clearly. My dad coming up to me, and he worked at a TV station in Columbus, Ohio, and he was an engineer there. And he said, "What would you rather do, shoot on film or video?" And I said, "Video, because if I screw up the take, I can erase it or do it again." And then for Christmas or my birthday, when I was 12, he had this old black and white security camera that they got rid of, and he fixed it up. And that was my first video camera. But it was a tube camera, so if you showed it on a white wall, you could see the image of the staircase that it used to shoot, because it was burned into the tube. And the very first day I got it, I started making little music videos and horror movie bits and all that stuff. And I saved all that stuff. And like my brother and my family was like, "Why don't you get rid of all that stuff?" And I said, "Because sometime we'll want to look back on this, you know." Little did I know YouTube and all that stuff would be available. But last year, for 8 months, it took me 8 months to do, I digitized 508 VHS tapes, because that was my next. I got a color video camera when I was 14, and oh my God, I'm moving up in the world, you know? And then I just progressed from there. But I don't want to even guess how many hours of footage I've shot in my life, but my whole life is on video. Literally. I mean, you're in a lot of it, man. You know?
Matter of fact, was one of those 508 VHS that you did the footage of living in Chicago?
Yes, it was. I have it on DVD now, man. Every one of those tapes is on DVD.
Oh, man.
So I can burn you a DVD right here, and you can have it. Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, I had to go out and purchase a VCR, you know, and adapters that I hook it up to my Mac, and I would and then I logged everything. So I have text files of every single thing that's on those tapes. And some of the tapes are so old they wouldn't even play. And I'd take them apart and figure out what was the problem. And I mean, I've got so much stuff. And a big part of my YouTube channel has been archiving a lot of old like commercials and stuff like that. And people are like, "Well, and I upload it 60 frames per second. So it looks even better than it did when it, you know, first came out." And everybody's like, "Well, how the hell did you get this?" I'm like, "Because I never threw them away, you know." I had boxes in my basement for decades. And now the way the digital stuff works, I mean, I back everything up 2 times. I mean, this might seem overkill to you, but like all the, I shot 47 gigs of video on the California tour, and I put on a 50 gig Blu-ray disc. I burn them twice, and I have them in 2 separate areas of my house. So if something happens to the first one, I still have that original one, you know? So yeah, video is my life. So
you were one of the first people in the modern era, like the internet era, to have a Coaster video.
Oh, Coaster 99. Yeah.
So just to kind of explain to some people that are out there that aren't old enough to remember any of this. So in the ancient and crusty days, in the 80s, there were some guys that made videos, like Paul Greenwald made videos.
Yeah, films. 8mm, like things, dubbed the VHS, yeah.
Yeah, like Roy Brashears, like they would take film and cut these things to shreds in the early, mid-80s.
Yeah.
And made what we consider to be Coaster videos now, mm-hmm. like hobbyist videos.
Roller Coaster Weekend.
He finally put those on DVD like 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, I put my copy on DVD too. So, yeah.
I have the official Roy Brashears.
What was that?
I have the official Roy Brashears DVDs.
Yeah, well, you have the official one. Well, you know, when I did Coaster 99, he contacted me and wanted me to help him edit the Roller Coaster Weekend 3. And I said, "No, man, this was just too much for me to deal with." So that's how I started digital editing too. Because mine was a sequel to Mark's video, Mark McKenzie's video, original Coaster. And I think Julie did a Coaster 2000.
She did Coaster 2000. I believe it came out in January, February of 2003.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I just remember getting a copy. And then I there are so many other people that once they learned how to digital edit, I have a whole probably 30 tapes from all of our buddies, and I've digitized those, and there was some really good stuff in there, man. I mean, quite honestly, some of the videos, I'm not going to judge anybody, but from their first tape to their second tape was like night and day. Like the first tape was just like, "Oh, okay, you know, this is interesting. And then the second one just knocks it, you know, everybody has to learn. You have to learn.
It's just funny to think, like, so there was first, it was Mark. In he was the first guy that had like a digital video and like,
yeah, it's what he did for a living.
Yeah. And then you were next. And then Rob, Rob Albee was pretty much immediately after you. And that's like the beginning of like Theme Park Review.
Yeah. I think Rob's debuted right around the same time. And Mark's video was like 30 minutes long. And I remember him asking me, do you want to do the second one? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I learned how to edit on tape and not digitally. And then when I got my first like digital computer with built for digiting, it was a Sony Vaio and it had a 10 gig hard drive. I remember Mark and I like flipping out like, wow, you're never going to fill that up. Okay. I swear we had that conversation. And he's like, and in my, the very first digital shot I ever edited was for Coaster 99. And it's a shot of Americana, the first segment. The intro was done at the end, actually. Like by that time I was comfortable enough editing stuff, but there's a shot of the coaster going over the first drop and I timed it to the music. And when I played it back and saw that, I was like, oh my God, this is so easy. And this is going to be so much fun. And I had a great time. And because of that, my video ended up being an hour and a half long, and everybody else's, the standard used to be like an hour long.
Yeah, like 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, and then because Mark put an Easter egg in his video of an x-ray of a broken rib, because he broke his rib on Raven, and I was like, well, I can do that too. So I put four hidden things in there, and a backmasked message at the end, and then when I put it on DVD, finally, I put subtitles for all the song titles, chapter select, and there's an audio commentary track, which you've helped me do that on a DVD before, several actually, the whole Europe stuff. But yeah, those are fun, man. They're fun times.
How much do you see, like, do you see that there's any influence that you guys had early on to the people now, or is it just like they've kind of copied like what's just out there in mass media?
Well, okay, so that's
like 20 years has passed.
That's so weird. When I was at Media Day, enthusiasts came up and said, I've had two people tell me this year, that I was essentially doing YouTube before YouTube existed. So I was doing kind of like vlogging stuff, you know, there wasn't any term for it or any of that stuff back then. And we didn't have a platform of it other than to hand it out on physical VHS tapes to everybody, you know? And that was the way, I mean, if you think about it, that's so ass backwards now, you know? And, but I'm glad. I mean, even, and it goes beyond the video thing. Think about rec.rollercoaster, the Usenet group we used to be part of, okay? That was the place to everybody to talk online.
That was the only one.
So I'm at Mystic Timbers Media Day, and there's so many groups there that I have never heard of, okay? I mean, like media groups that are coaster things, and more power to them. That's awesome, because we're all there for the same reason, to have fun. You know, when you don't have fun, that's when you need to bow out of this hobby. You know, don't put the FU in fun. But it's ended up being this whole thing where it's like you can see evidence of stuff that we used to do back then, and everybody, but most of those kids, I'm going to call them kids because I'm old, most of those kids don't know about that side. And I'm hoping someday they look back and say, well, how did this all start? And they start going back and back and back and saying, there's this thing called rec.rollercoaster. And they actually had video parties and, you know.
How many VHS was the ECO footage? Was it 20?
It was all, ECO on mini DV, and it was 10.
It was 10, that's right. Yeah. It was 20 DVDs, I think, initially or something like that.
No, it was 10. The Japan was 15 DVDs, and okay. Europe 2007 was 7. So, yeah, I mean, and then, you know, I edit these smaller versions of them. So on YouTube, like I take 1 hour that's on that tape I recorded and narrow it down to 15 minutes. So I try to take the highlights from the 15 minutes, and people comment and like, is this all you shot? And I'm like, oh, heavens, no, you're only seeing a fraction. So I have people from like England asking me, can you send me all the DVD? I've sent the whole stack of that stuff to people over in England. Nigel, our driver, he has all that stuff. And he's just like, oh, my God, you know. So I love it. I love archiving stuff. I love showing history. I mean, as much as it's my channel, it has not a lot to do about me. It's my perspective of a good time that I want to share with other people. You know, I've always heard Irish people are good storytellers, so here I am.
Speaking of, you mentioned some of the DVD sets, obviously. Sure. The ECO trip. Mm-hmm. We used to call these raw footage, I think is what.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We would have these huge, huge volumes of tape, and we would just sit there and watch it. The Japanese one is one where I always end up watching, and I'm like, there's a lot of train footage.
I know.
But luckily, now that you've edited down, less train footage.
Yeah.
Japan, I just wanted to get your thoughts on, there's a park that you went to. I mean, there's several parks that have closed that you went to. Obviously, it's been so long, but Space World.
Yes.
It's closing at the end of the year.
I was there on my birthday in 2005.
Give me, since you're probably going to be the only person I have on here that I can think of in the immediate future that's been to Space World. Any thoughts about its closing or about the park itself?
It was a big park for Jim Raymar, who was on the trip. There was only three of us on this trip. And it was big for him because he's such a huge fan of Magnum at Cedar Point. And they have like the mini Magnum. And it, back when I was there, they had trains that just looked like Magnum, the Stormtrooper trains, they call them. And they were green. And that was a big park for him. But we did so many parks on that trip. And that was like at the end of the tour, we had like a week left, I think, maybe just a little bit over a week. We were there for like a month. And they don't all blend together, but your enthusiasm for new stuff starts to be like, oh, it's good, we're getting new rides, but okay, here we go. You know, because we did, I think, three parks that same day. So we did, it was a, what can I remember about the park? The Magnum, the Titan, I think it's called. Wasn't like Magnum. I mean, it didn't feel like Magnum. It was really rough, I remember. I remember they had a really cool log flume. They had this incredibly powerful Marusone ride, the one with the shuttle. I can't remember the name. Saturn.
Saturn, yeah. That's,
no, that's the launch.
Venus.
Venus, thank you. And that thing was just a powerhouse. And because I marathoned on Pyrenees the day before and I had bloody shoulders, I could only ride that thing at Space World a couple times because it was digging in my shoulders and it was uncomfortable. As much as I wanted to ride that, I really couldn't. I don't remember a whole lot other than the rides. There was a weird kind of aero mine that half the train was backwards and half of it was forward, and that was taken out. And it looked really crappy. The paint was peeling off of it. What else? Yeah, and I heard it was closing. By the time I left, that Inman wasn't there. But it's sad because the Japanese love their parks, even though there was nobody in any of the parks we went to except Fuji-Q, you know. But
just become infamous for it, the stage.
Yeah. Oh my God, it was really long lines there.
I feel like when I got in the hobby, you know, the only people that had been over there were like Lisa Scheinen.
Yeah.
And what's his name that used to work for Weather Channel?
Oh, Matt Crowther, yeah.
Yeah, Matt Crowther. Like, they were the only people that I knew that had been in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, these are the good parks. And you're like, oh, okay, those are the good parks. And then, like, once people started to get to Japan, like, in larger numbers, like, the opinion of Fuji-Q Highlands went from, like, way up here to, like, sub-basement level.
Well, we had
Magic Mountain of Japan.
Oh yeah, that's a perfect example. I mean, a description of that park, because for what I remember, we were so excited to do that. We had a really long train ride there, and we get there and we realize we're at the park like 2 hours before the gates open. So we're like, oh no. So we just waited by the train station. And then the good thing about the parks area is you can bring all your luggage to the park and they will hold it at like marketing or ticket windows. You know, you pay like a small fee and you can go in and have fun and not worry about your luggage. So that's what we did with that park, because we were moving to another hotel that day. And the day prior, the ECC was there and they were starting their exclusive ride session on Fujiyama.
Yes.
And the chain broke when they got near the top. So nobody got to ride it. And when we got to the park, they were working on the chain, and we got to ride it that day. It opened later. But we get to the park, and get our tickets, and the first thing we do is head right to Dodonpa, which is actually my favorite coaster in the world, but now I don't know because they added the loop to it. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah.
At the tower. And we waited an hour and a half for it, and it was not that long of a line, like the line. It just loading, they don't, it's foreign to them. They don't pump people through. They have Fujiyama was fun. We waited a long time for that too. We ran into somebody we met at another park somewhere else in Japan like 2 weeks prior. We ran into her in line for Fujiyama. She pulled out a picture of Jim on her phone. And I'm like, what? You know? Their haunted walkthrough attraction, it's like an old hospital, at the time was the longest one. It took us 40 minutes to walk through. It was awesome. It was awesome. So those moments I liked. We only got to ride Dodonpa twice, Fujiyama twice, and the other stuff, you know, we just kind of went and did. There was some weird thing where you stood in these coffins and they simulated you being buried alive, which was odd. God, there was so much at that park, but the operations are just like, ugh. And the whole day we're there, we're like, oh, well, Mount Fuji's somewhere here, but it was all foggy and you couldn't see it. And then the last hour we were there, it appeared. And we're like, wow. And then the next day, we had a long train ride to another park and you could see it plain as day. And one of the Japanese businessmen that was sitting next to us on the train said, it's very rare this time of year for you to see Mount Fuji. And there it is. So that was kind of cool.
So we obviously have just talked about the Magic Mountain of Japan.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about Magic Mountain itself. So you did a California tour with the memorial for about 6 weeks.
Yep.
You started in Sacramento, ended in Los Angeles metro area.
Yep.
We'll talk a little bit about some of the memorial spots as well. But
sure.
We'll go to the parks primarily. I saw you went to SeaWorld, Adventure City. Did you do Universal?
No.
You went to Disneyland's California Adventure.
And Disneyland. I just didn't shoot any video there.
Magic Mountain. Did you do Knott's?
Yes, twice.
Okay. I'm trying to think what else there was.
I did...
Legoland.
What?
No Legoland.
No Legoland. I got very close to that. So, long story short, the tour was already booked, and we were supposed to go from Sacramento to San Diego to LA, and San Diego canceled on us like a week before the tour. So we're like, oh man, well, we have a week off. And I said, I'm not flying home back to Ohio for a week. I have plenty of friends in LA. I can go do whatever I want. I'll go revisit the parks. So I just sent up a couple texts and said, hey, I'm going to be in town. Anybody want to meet up? And I hadn't done a trip with Jeff Johnson in like 9 years or something. I hadn't even seen him. I hadn't talked to him on the phone that long since you and I did that trip with him. and that's the beauty of this hobby. You can go out there and no time has passed. So on my first day off, Jeff and I went down to SeaWorld, and we were only there for 2 hours. And he had a plan. He's like, I'm taking you somewhere else. So we went into Carlsbad, and we got off the exit for Legoland. And I'm like, oh man, Ellen and I have bad memories about this park last time we were here. let's not go to Legoland. He's like, no. And he took me to the Museum of Making Music. It's a NAMM project. And we were there for like an hour or so. It was really cool. It was awesome. You get to play instruments and stuff. And I even bought a t-shirt there. But Legoland's parking gates are literally next to the parking lot for this thing. Like, I could see Legoland. And I'm like, oh boy, okay.
Just to kind of explain to people, we went to Legoland, this is 08.
I think it was 08. Yes. This video is going to be showing up on YouTube this year, by the way.
What's up?
I'm editing the HD versions of the randomness, and that segment's going to be in there.
Oh, yeah. That's exciting. We paid, I think, $55 a person, and we were there 45 minutes.
Yeah, 45 minutes.
But we did ride all three coasters and the RoboCoaster.
And we did. And the RoboCoaster video is on my channel, a ride. That was the first 60-second video. Yeah, but we had this whole, there's this whole bit you and I did before we went into the park about, you know, we were trying to avoid Magic Mountain on that trip.
Yeah.
Okay. and we're like $60 to get in for 45 minutes. That's more, I mean, it's where, clearly that's when you realize you have a problem, you know, like, God. But we had such a great time.
Okay, it's cheaper.
Yeah.
And at that point.
Yeah. And we were just like, so we knocked out the coasters and we're like, well, is there anything else we want to do here? No. Okay, let's leave. Well, what else are we going to do other than that scare? Oh, I almost called you. I can't believe we're talking about this story. So I went down to San Diego three times on this tour. Yeah. And on the first time I was come back, I went to go get gas. Guess what I did? What? I did the same thing you and I did by accident. We went to Camp Pendleton.
Oh, when we got off the exit by accident?
Yes, I did the same thing, and I almost called you and said, Alan, I did it again. So we were like, well, do we want to go to Magic Mountain? Okay. Well, we got there like at 5 p.m. or something. It was like the last 5 hours. They were no, we got there early, and they were supposed to open until 6, but they were open until like 8 or something.
Yeah.
And we had an awesome time there. We had
the best time I've ever had at Magic Mountain.
Yeah, me too, by far. And I was expecting that when I went this trip, and clearly that was not happening.
You should never go with expectations to Magic Mountain.
Well, because I'm on the road with somebody that's not, I mean, he likes amusement parks, but he's not like you and I. When Chris and Rick offered to get our tickets, because it was buy get one in free day at mm-hmm. the park, he's like, yeah, I'll go. And we went in there, and it was that parks like that cannot handle that type of mentality. I mean, it was so bad. We did Ninja First, and the thing I don't like, the thing that really bothered me, other than the amount of line jumping we got, was their fast lane or whatever it's called, their cheat thing. Mm-hmm. They don't have it like one car reserved for those. They can sit anywhere. So we were waiting for the front of Ninja, and so many of those people kept on pouring in and just wanting the front seat. So our wait ended up being like a half an hour when it should have been 5 minutes. We did Ninja. We did the drop tower on the side of Superman, which was awesome. We did the single rider line for that. We did Superman backwards, which is so much better, I think, backwards. And we did Green Lantern, which I'll never ride again.
Oh, my God. Did you do that? Did you get on Full Throttle at least?
Well, not on this trip. Not on this visit. I did go back.
Okay.
My insanity. I went back. Yeah. It has proven to me that you cannot escape this once it's in your blood, truthfully. But we got in line for Twisted Colossus, and it went down, but they weren't making an announcement. And apparently, I didn't know this, but this is what Rick and Chris mentioned, that if you're in line and it's officially closed, they give you an exit pass to come back. And they weren't making that judgment. So Chris went over and said, hey, can you at least make an announcement? We've been in line and nothing's happening for half an hour. And they said, well, it'll be a minor delay, which we know, whatever, you know, we've experienced that. And then it was another, I can't remember how long time went by, and Rick and Chris started like, what's going on? Why aren't you closing the ride? They were still letting people in the queue. And then they said, well, it's not running, but it's not closed. And I swear. So Chris said, well, what does it have to be to make it closed? Well, our operations, our ride manager has to make that decision. Okay, where's your ride manager? Well, they're not here. So they're like, we're like, well, when did they get back? You know? So we ended up leaving the line empty-handed, and then we walked over to Full Throttle, same thing. I mean, it just looked like it wasn't going, so we left and went to Rick's, played pinball. He has a new house, new pinball machines. It was awesome. Had a great lunch. And then I think the next park I did was SeaWorld. Do you hear that, by the way?
Yeah, that was the first time, though.
Okay. Hold on. I have to... I'm not going to answer it, but I'm just going to clear it out of my thing.
That's fine. Well, because, just that people know, Rick.
Yes. Rick Turner is a great friend of ours. He is a Disney Imagineer. He just got back from Shanghai opening up Pirates of the Caribbean. That was his baby. And he's currently working on some rather large projects for Disney right now that are going to blow everybody away. So.
I am excited. Rick's a great guy.
He is.
I also did not realize, either I forgot, or somehow this has been not revealed to me at any point, that he was the roommate of Weird Al Yankovic.
That is true. Yep.
In college.
Yep, he certainly was. And he's taken Weird Al to Disney, him and his family. And like when, I think he said when they, when Weird Al plays LA, he gets backstage and all that stuff. But like all those really like old recordings of Weird Al Yankovic that he recorded in like the bathroom at the college, Rick was like the one that was doing like technical stuff, like wiring things up or apparently or something like that. I can't remember exactly what he told me, but super cool guy. We did both Disney parks. We were there at 8 a.m. and we closed down. We didn't get out of there until like 10 p.m. We were there. It was awesome. And I really enjoy any time I get to hang out with Rick because he's real interesting. He's got a lot of great stories and he knows a lot of technical stuff. So getting to go to those parks with him was a treat for me because I got to hear what he was working on in Shanghai and got to kind of look over a wall and see what he's working on now. And it's going to floor everybody, man. So I can't wait. So, yeah.
So just to finish on Magic Mountain here, and then we'll get to the parts.
Sure.
So with Magic Mountain, so you did get on Full Throttle then?
I did. I went back. The last day off I had from the tour, I had to pick up my coworker at LAX at night, and I did stuff like the Griffith Observatory and all that stuff. And I was like, well, I still have 6 hours. I bet you I can make it to Magic Mountain again. You know, it won't be crowded, you know. And I got there at 3 p.m. And when Alan, when I tell you I parked in Guam, I should have taken a picture to prove it, parked in the very last spot available in the parking lot in the clear back corner of the dirt lot. So I said, well, this will be fun. I'm going to clock how long it takes for me to walk from here to the front gate, 23 minutes. Okay. No tram. It was me walking. And I went in and I was like, I know I have to pay full price. I don't have anybody to get me in free, but I really want to try these two rides. And they were both running. And I said, well, I'm really against this fast lane system. I think it's going to do really bad for the parks in the future. I mean, I could see them offering it for food and bathrooms even possibly. I don't know. But
they have been talking about fast Q-bots for food.
Yeah, it just turns me off to going to visiting parks, quite honestly. I mean, it's really kind of it's a system that doesn't need fixed. Or it didn't need fixed. You know, just wait in line like everybody else, have good capacity rides. But anyway, they sold out of the fast lane stuff. So I'm like, oh Jesus, okay. Well, I'm just gonna tough it out. I waited 2 hours for Twisted Colossus, and it was awesome. I rode in the very back. It was amazing. And then I waited 2 hours for Full Throttle and experienced the worst queue ever this side of Oblivion. Okay. And what they do, and it didn't make any sense to me, they have you in this tent, okay? And every 25 minutes, they advance just enough to get up to the ramp. So there's this whole area from the station to the ramp, and then there's this huge area that's open with no queue. It's almost like you're walking down a red carpet to the station. And they would let maybe 3 train loads go, and then they'd stop you for another 25 minutes. Everybody'd sit on the floor. And the whole time, they're blaring this dubstep music really, really loud. And it's on like a 12-minute loop, so you hear the same song over and over and over. Again, and finally, when it came time for me to get up there, I was just curious. So I asked the ride operator, I said, I'm just curious why you don't have people going all the way up in a solid line to make it move, you know?
Yeah.
And she said, well, we can't have anybody standing under the launch. It's unsafe. And I said, okay, well, there went that reason. I don't believe that for a second. Maybe something happened I don't know about. I don't know, but
It would be you know, terrible to have to build like a covering.
Yeah. So
the covering.
Yeah, heaven forbid you spend some more money. But so I finally got on. I rode it in the back. Fantastic ride. I was not prepared for the ending. So that kind of I had my hands up and just enjoying going over the top of that thing. And then the brakes hit and I buckled over that line. So, well, I didn't know about that, but I would that. That ride is awesome. I would love to have ridden again. But then I left and drove down to LAX and picked up my coworker and had to take him to the emergency room because he was sick. So fun.
Disney.
Yes.
So you haven't been to Disneyland or DCA in a long time, right?
Since, I think, with you. Did we go to Disney when we were there?
No, we didn't go.
then probably, oh my God, yeah, 15 years.
It's changed a little bit.
Yeah, it's changed quite a bit.
What did you think of, I saw you on Radiator Springs Racers.
That whole area just blew me away. It was awesome. We only did it twice. We didn't get to ride it at night, but it was awesome. Yeah.
What do you think of New Soarin'?
Loved it. Soarin', and I am not afraid to admit it, the original Soarin' is the only ride that I've ever ridden. When I first rode it the very first initial time back when that park opened, it almost got me emotional because it was so beautiful. Like, I was just like, oh my God. Like, I literally had no words when I got off the ride because it was so real feeling. The new one's decent. I could kind of tell what was GCI and which wasn't. Not GCI. Computer CG, I'll say that. Stupid brain. But I thought it was done really well. Yeah.
I think what else? There wasn't really anything to Disneyland that's been open since.
No, I did Hyperspace Mountain, which was cool. We spent half of our day there and then went back to DCA and did the World of Color and a couple other little things. So yeah, it was fun.
Adventure City, new coaster.
Fun. That's a nice little ride. Yeah. It was I swear I read something where they said that when they were gonna open that they were only going to let kids ride it, no adults. So it didn't interest me. And then on the trip when I was at Knott's, they were like, no, you can go ride that. So, and they gave Ace a really nice discount. So I went there on a Saturday and got on it. There was no wait, okay, and rode with an actor, Harry Parnell from Lost and Oz and Sons of Anarchy and Zero Dark Thirty. Him and his daughter right in front of me. And I started talking rides with him. I didn't know who he was. And she had her hands up before the train even left the station. I said, oh, future coaster enthusiast in training. And he turned around and says, oh, are you a coaster guy? I said, yeah. And he goes, have you been to Knott's Berry Farm? I was like, yeah, like a half an hour ago.
Down the street.
Yeah. And he goes, yeah, literally. I mean, you can see Knott's from this coaster.
Yeah.
You can see the tower. And he said, Magic Mountain? I said, was there earlier, and I'm probably going to go back. Disneyland? I said, yeah. I said, I'm from Ohio. And he's like, you're from Ohio, and you've been to all these parks? I'm like, dude, it's what I do. And, like, I'm riding the coaster, and then we're pulling into the station as we're pulling the station. And it's smooth. It's really cool. There's some cool sound effects and stuff with it. And it was my first Gerstlauer. I guess that's a family boomerang? Is that what that's called?
Yeah, that's what they call them.
Okay. Yeah, that was my first one like that. And I was pulling the station, and he turns around, and he said something like, enjoy your trip. And I'm like, wait. I said, you were on Lost. And he's like, yeah, I was. And I said, forgive me, man. I forget your name. I'm bad with names. And he's like, Harold, what's your name? And I'm like, Sean. And then we were walking down the exit ramp, and I'm like, hey, man, I hate to do this to you because I'm sure you get it all the time. And I don't want to disturb your family time, but can I get a picture of this to show somebody that, you know, people that I know that really appreciate your work? And his little girl takes off running. He's like, well, I'm going to go be a dad. And I said, okay. And then he went to go get her. And then he came back to me and said, let's take the picture. And then rotated us so the sun was right in her face and all that stuff. So here's the cool thing about that. So I text that picture to Sean Winder and to Chris Murray. Okay. And I'm walking out of the parking lot, or walking to my car in the parking lot, and Sean Winder's like, you're at Adventure City? And he lives really close to the park. I said, yeah. And he's like, I'm at Adventure City right now. So his son's really big in Pokemon Go. And they were at home, and there was one of those Pokemon or whatever the hell it is in the park. So he's like, Dad, we have to go catch it. And he didn't catch it. But he was in the park trying to catch his Pokemon when I was there. So that was pretty cool. And you know that park. That park's the size of my backyard.
When was the last time you saw Sean Winder?
I took coworkers out to Los Angeles and Vegas in 2009, and he met me up at the pier.
That's a lot more recent than me. I haven't seen him in about
14. He looks exactly the same. I hung out with him at Knott's Berry Farm, and then we went to a concert. Your favorite band, UFO. And
so the UFO thing, real briefly, Jeff Johnson, our mutual friend that we mentioned earlier, gave us a couple of bootlegs years ago.
Yeah.
On this California trip that we did, and we were geocaching in the desert on, was it I-10 or whatever? Or
I-15
between LA and Vegas.
Baker, California.
And we were trying to figure out what to put in the geocache. And we were like, well, we have this UFO bootleg.
Yeah, why not? It's the desert. It fit in with the UFO and all that stuff.
Yeah,
you know, like Roswell or something.
Wasn't Jeff like, duh, you like, guys love that CD? Like, yeah, it was great.
Well, we listened to it. We did listen to it. But, bootlegs are weird because you either have to really like the band, because most bootlegs, the quality of the audio is bad. And this was a decent sounding concert, but I wasn't familiar a whole lot with the band back then. And we got rid of that thing, man. Maybe it's still in an ammo can near Baker, California, under a power line. You know? I told him that eventually. I told him on the trip too. But, and then when he tells me he wants the band Saxon's playing.
Yeah, Saxon is kind of a ridiculous band, but like in a good way.
Yeah, like I mean, you know, people make fun of them and stuff, but they were one of the original metal bands, you know.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Do you want to go see Saxon?" And I was like, "Yeah, that might be fun, you know. I'm up for doing that." And then he texts me back. He's like, "Holy crap, UFOs opening up!" And my first reaction was that ammo can. I have actually on my iPod the best of UFO, and I know some of their hits and stuff. And I got to tell you, there was some blues guitarist that was amazing that opened up first. But those two bands, Saxon was just amazing. I mean, that Biff, what I can't remember his last name, but he was, it sounded amazing. And then UFO came on and we were all kind of like, because the singer looks like Jigsaw from the movie Saw. I mean, he's like this old guy. And on their last song, I kid you not, it looked like he was going to collapse. Like the band stopped and they're like, what's going on? Like they didn't know what to do. Like he just went like that. And Jeff and I look at each other and we're like, uh-oh, something's going on. Something's going on. And they snapped out of it and then closed the show. But I'm glad I got to see him. I can knock it off my bucket list. UFO's been a huge influence from everybody. I mean, the vocalist and main songwriter for Crowbar's got UFO tattooed on him, you know. But
you went to see the Rainbow Bar.
Yes. Oh, that was actually Mike Straley's idea. We were looking for something to do. He had never been to LA, and he's like, let's go to the Rainbow Bar and Grill. And when he was over here, we were working last year. I had the Lemmy documentary, and Lemmy, they show, you know, Lemmy's seat and his little video game that he used to play and all that stuff. And we went there, and Lemmy's favorite drink was a Jack and Coke. And they've renamed the Jack and Coke Lemmy. So if you go up to the bar there and say, I want a Lemmy, it's a Jack and Coke. And we went there and sat right next to his seat that was there, his old seat. They have the statue there and everything. And I had a couple Lemmys there. And then we met this girl there, and she's like, I live in the same apartment complex that Lemmy used to do. Want me to take you there? So we hung out with her for a little bit. And then we met this older couple from Vegas that they went on the little tour, and then we went to Lemmy's front door, and I was just like, oh, dude, you know, and then just because I could, they renamed the outdoor bar portion Lemmy's Lounge, and it's right next to the Roxy, where you and I have seen a hardcore show there once before. Okay. And I didn't know they were side by side. Like when we were at the Roxy, I didn't even realize Rainbow was right next door. We would have gone in. So we go in to actually go eat. And before I did that, I sat next to Lemmy's chair and downloaded on my phone Ace of Spades, the entire album, at Lemmy's Lounge. So I have it. I never owned it really before, you know, so I have it. I know it's sacrilege. I know the album front to back, but I just never owned it. So we go in, and I didn't mention this in the video. Next to us, the booth next to us, Steel Panther is sitting. And they're playing the Roxy that night. And if we had more time, I had to take Mike to LAX that night. If we had more time, I would have probably gone and seen him because I heard they put on a great show. But I dropped Mike off at LAX and got a really crappy motel room at in Santa Monica. And then I went to Knott's the next morning, I think.
So Knott's. Talk about Knott's here. Rather, Otherwise, you're going to talk about the nightclubs of the Sunset
Strip. Yeah, that's the only time where I was on the Sunset Strip. Mike actually went back with some friends from Ohio. They just moved to California later, but
we also, just for the record, Sean and I had tickets to go see a show at the Whiskey.
In this moment.
Yeah, and we had the wrong day.
Yeah, we got there. We're running up to the Whiskey, and we're so happy we're going to get to see a show at the legendary Whiskey, and we look on the marquee, and it says, "Year of the Dragon." And then Chris Murray is with us, and we went, what the hell? And I looked down at my ticket, and we were in San Diego the next night, or we wouldn't have been able to make it, you know, or we would have been able to. But we made up for it for going to the other show.
Yeah, we did go see Darkest Hour at the Roxy, which was
scary. And then we were so amazed because it had a curtain and a curved stage. And here comes this band we had never heard of called Whitechapel. And we were just like, wow. And then there was a mirror, and we were like, oh, okay. And then there was another band. Oh, you're Symphonic Carnage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about the wildest show you could imagine for a venue.
I know.
Like, oh, it's got a big red curtain, and, you know, and they draw it between every
scene. I know.
Like, it's like, oh, like, this is like some sort of fine art, and then it opens up, and it's like crust punk or something.
Like, well, we were like, there was all these, like, quote-unquote hardcore kids on their phones, you know, and kind of ritzy-looking kids from L.A. and Hollywood and stuff. And I remember you saying, oh, I wonder how metal this is going to be, you know?
Yeah.
And then the curtain rises, and then Whitechapel comes on, and then it was on. There was fist fighting. We're like, okay, this is good.
So you went to, you were in San Diego, went to SeaWorld.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts on SeaWorld? Well, actually, I should ask about Knott's first. We were just getting to that. So Knott's Berry Farm.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go on Iron Reef?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think? Yes.
It was good. It was it reminded me a lot of the what's the at Disney the shoot 'em up with Toy Story?
Toy Story Mania.
So there was an interactive 3D. The renderings were done really well. They were actually specific to that park. You could see some of Knott's old rides in the backgrounds. There was some technical 3D glitching near the end. They just didn't have the separating things right, so there was some blurring and stuff. I think we did it twice. It was good. I didn't know, because the last time I'd been on that thing was that weird dinosaur ride, and this is a much needed improvement. So that was fun.
Did you do the log flume since they redid it?
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah,
log flume there is fantastic. I haven't seen the new Calico mine train.
We did that too. So that was cool.
Ghost Rider.
Yeah, Ghost Rider was awesome. It's strange. It's not as intense as it used to be. And not that that's a bad thing, but the thing that really, the trains, those GCI Millennium Flyer trains are awesome, but that Ghost Rider is a very lateral heavy ride, and GCIs don't really have a lot of heavy laterals because they bank so much. So it's strange to feel very strong laterals with those Millennium Flyer trains. Your body bends in ways you're not used to. Like, we're so used to the PTCs with the high sides. Mm-hmm. They don't really have those on those other ones. So you're kind of bent and holding on. It's a really strange feeling. So, but they did a great job. It flies, but it's much more easy to ride now.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else there that jumps.
We did Accelerator a couple times.
Silver Bullet, I'm sure.
Silver Bullet. We did the Mouse Coast Rider.
Yeah.
Which is probably the tamest out of that version I've seen, because they have magnetic braking on all the straightaway, so it's not really out of control, but it was fun. I've heard they've modified the cars since I've been there that are really painful with these shin things. But one thing going up the lift hill, if you look to the right when you're going up the lift hill, there's a fire station there that got burnt down. It's just kind of strange. The vehicles are still in it and everything. So,
San Diego and SeaWorld.
Mm-hmm.
Manta, I think, is an awesome ride.
It's amazing. Jeff and I had no expectations going in that at all. And we were walking up and we're like, well, this looks more considerable than we thought. And we rode it a few times, and it was fun, man.
It's like the family version of Maverick.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly perfect description, man. Perfect description. That was my first of the Blue Fire-esque type trains. And they're so comfortable. I didn't know the whole thing at the beginning with the tunnel and the back and forth. The launch really caught us off guard because it's so sudden. Great ride, though, man. Great ride. We were only there for 2 hours, though.
Journey to Atlantis is obviously not as over the top as the Orlando version in terms of what they did, but...
It's more of a coaster.
Yeah, definitely more coaster.
Yeah, I don't count the Orlando one, but I count the one in you know...
I kind of think it almost works better because it has less stuff.
Yeah.
Like you got some like bubbles and these like projections and
yeah,
the elevator and...
Elevator was cool.
Yeah.
Elevator was cool.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else there. Did you do the Rapids ride? I'm guessing no.
Nope. No, there was actually reminders of our Legoland trip at SeaWorld because we spent... On the video I have, Jeff is saying, and I'm going to let the cat out of the bag and just tell everybody the secret, but Jeff says, hey, Clyde Cadiddlehopper got us free tickets. That was our way of eating some humble pie because we paid $90 to get into SeaWorld for 2 hours.
Whatever we've said about Legoland in the past, we apologize.
Yes, exactly. But we really wanted to credit, and we could have stayed there, but Jeff really wanted to get to this other, you know, this museum of making music before they closed. I'm glad we did because that was even better than SeaWorld, I thought.
Did you go anywhere else? Did you do Marine World?
No. Well, so after our Sacramento stop ended, we wanted to do San Francisco stuff because Mike had never been to San Francisco. We wanted to do San Francisco stuff. So I got this hotel in Vallejo, okay? And I pull in at night and it's literally, I can throw a rock to Six Flags and we couldn't go because we wanted to do the Golden Gate and all that stuff. I could have probably gone there right at opening and ridden the missing credits and be done with it. But I was like, that's not what this trip's about, man. You know? So I saw
it. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah. It's not going to go where I watched it fade off in the distance. So
I'll be seeing you in person in a month.
Yeah.
So we'll be at Hollywood Nights.
Yes.
Which is going to be it's a coaster enthusiast event for those who don't know. Mm-hmm. At Holiday World, it's I believe June 2nd and 3rd, I want to say this year.
I'll tell you right now. Hold on. Look on my calendar.
Tonight event, you must be a coaster enthusiast to attend or be the friend.
Second or third?
Second or third? Yeah. Second. So it's, you know, for me, being a person that's into wood coasters primarily, that's like on the hobby. Legend, Voyage, Raven, probably 6 to 8 hours of ERT between all of those at night. Voyage, probably Breakless. They haven't officially said that.
Oh, they did it last year. So
they did last year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. At the very beginning of ERT, it wasn't. And then we're like, well, that's ridiculous. Just start it off. So they did. So it was awesome.
I'm, you know, the last time I was there was for Hollywood Nights 2 years ago, and they had the break on, which everyone was like,
yeah.
I'm really happy. As soon as I heard that they were taking it off for ERT, and they did that last year, that changed my mentality about going back this year.
It was awesome. Well, and the ERT on Thunderbird was great, too. You know, I had a great
Thunderbird's time. A really good ride, man.
Yeah.
Really, really good ride.
Yep.
I mean, you and I both like B&Ms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of almost expected that we would like it as a result. But there are people that are not like B&M fans that are
right. I understand. It didn't have a long way. Well, you have to walk forever to get back to it. But when you're back there, you might as well just sit on it. But that's the only B&M. Okay, here's some geek talk here. The only B&M I think I've ridden, and I'm sure somebody will correct me, that has one friction brake on the entire ride and it's not used. There's a friction brake for the transfer track. 100% ride. There's not a, you know, break anywhere on that ride except at the transfer. And so has one, I think that's, maybe I'm wrong. No, I think that's right. Cause the launch doesn't have any friction either. So there you go. Coaster geeks like myself, but yeah, I can't wait for the event, man. It's going to be, I was just talking to some other enthusiasts tonight about it and we're excited to do it. I'm excited to be back there. It's more of a social event, I think, for us. I mean, you can get tons of rides in, but catching up with everybody and seeing people you haven't seen in years and perhaps some people you don't want to see. No, I'm kidding.
We want to see anybody. Yeah. It's always the way it works out, though.
Yeah.
There's usually a few people that we intentionally attempt to avoid.
Well, I remember you and I doing that when we went. I'm not going to name who it was, but you and I were in line for Goliath at Magic Mountain. And we were just getting ready to get on, and somebody we know that was on the ECO trip was getting off the ride in the same row we were getting on, and we just went oh and turned our heads the other way and kind of walked in the train backwards. So it wasn't anything that was bad. It was just we didn't have anything in common. With
the last thing you want to do is like have that person hang out with you for 4 hours.
Well, I think actually I was like, oh, look who it is, and you're like, oh yeah, look who it is, or something. And it's not that we're better than anybody else, but yeah. You're right. I have a level of tolerance that has, for people that kind of take it over the top, my tolerance for that's kind of gone down over the years. And I think a lot of that has to do with I'm just not doing this as much as I used to, and that's because of what I do now. But yeah, we've had, you and I have had some crazy instances. But I met you in 99. Whoops, that just broke. I just met you in 99, right?
I think so. Yeah, sounds about right.
Just in 99.
Yeah, just 15 years ago.
Was that at Coney Island?
It might have been 2000, actually.
Yeah, it was 2000. It was the A Spring Con.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember you coming up saying, are you Irish Coast? Or something. I can't.
That was like 17.
Yeah, you were, totally.
That was literally half a lifetime ago.
I know, man. I know.
So we'll be at Hollywood Nights. Yep. I'll probably end up doing some sort of podcast afterwards, talking about it. Because it's like the event at this point.
Yeah, it really is.
More than Fall Fun Fest, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is the event for the coaster enthusiast, like core group, Illuminati, whatever you want to call it. I'm very excited about that. Do you have anything else you've got coming up this year as far as amusement park stuff goes?
I definitely want to get, I'm five away from hitting 1,000. So I definitely want to try to hit Dollywood's new one again. Both times I went last year, that new thing was closed. Really? They gave me a free ticket to come back this year. I may head to, Orlando in November. I don't think any of my travels this year are going to take me anywhere near parks that I want to go immediately. But right now, I mean, I have the new coaster an hour and 15 minutes away, and I may hit that a couple times. But I have a busy, busy summer. You and I are always emailing back and forth. Are you going to be available this time? Are you going to be available this time? And the thing that sucks about, like give you an example, the California tour, we filled in the last 2 weeks of that tour while we were on tour. We just, it's impossible to do. We did it, and now we're like, oh, if we can do that, we can do that for any other week we have off if we want to. But that kind of puts in my mind, like, I bought tickets. I'm going to some concerts here in next month. I'm seeing Devin Townsend probably three times. Devin Townsend Project, you see my shirt. And then I bought tickets for Megadeth, Meshuggah, and Tesseract on June 30th. So, yeah, I need to get back out to the park because I still really enjoy it. I need to get to a park with you. We need to do a trip.
We've been talking about this for like 2 years now. The last
time I know
together was we did Kings Island.
Is that a closing day when?
No. This was more recently.
Oh yeah, we went on a Saturday and we're like, oh my god, it's gonna be packed, and we knocked everything out. And
then we completely fucked that up. Again, this is one of these things where it's like I have these ideas and like. I've gotten a lot better at planning. It's because of stuff like this.
No, I love the way you come up with this stuff, dude. I really do, because you're spontaneous. I love that.
It was like, I think I had come in the night before, and we did
the Haunted Hoochie.
We did the Haunted Hoochie, which is this outstanding haunted attraction in the Columbus area. I don't know if the guy is still doing his conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, I don't know either. I didn't do it last year.
But that was a little wild. Lots of ministry being played to footage of 9/11 before you go into a 45-minute long haunt. But the next day, we went to Kings Island. Like, we only got like 4 or 5 hours of sleep. Like, we got some low number. And we were like, let's go to Kings Island for opening. So I was like, I think it's about 10. So we got there at like 9:45, and we're the only people there. And we're like, we should probably check and see what time they open. And it was like 11 a.m. open.
Yeah, I know.
So we're driving to go see the B&M Steel at Claymont.
All the Raven, or, you know, our Raven track was there. And
yep.
Yeah. Remember the little sign we saw?
That was the last time we went to a park together. So that's been like 2 years.
Yeah.
I think, maybe.
And then do you remember how we ended the trip?
We went to the Mounds Park.
Yeah, exactly.
which is actually really cool, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
There's a national park south of Columbus in, what is that town?
Chillicothe.
Chillicothe, yeah, which is, it's basically these old mounds that were constructed by ancient native civilizations, and their burial things are kind of like pyramids, but covered in grass.
So, speaking of Indians.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So, my entire life, you know, I'm definitely Irish. Okay, like 90% Irish, and one mom's side, Native American, you know, a little bit. So my mom did one of those things where you spit into a cup and they do all your, you know, they trace your ancestry, basically. Yeah. So guess what I found out this week? I have no Indian in me at all. English and Irish on my mom's side. So I mean, more Irish than my dad's side. I mean, I'm more Irish on my dad's side, but I have Irish on my mom's side as well, as far, and it's like Scandinavian and stuff like that. So I'm so glad, because literally the next tattoo I was going to get was going to be like a feather, kind of like a dream catcher, kind of wrapped in a four-leaf clover. Because my nickname in high school and some of my jobs used to be a Mick Savage, like the Irish side and Indian side. Now that's got to go away. I have no Indian in me. I'm kind of bummed about that, honestly, because I, my whole life, 45 years, I was told you have an Indian in you. You know, I got like high cheekbones and stuff. And they're like, oh, yeah, we can see it in you. No.
No. Magic of genetic testing has has trolled your plans once again.
Yes.
Well, we'll go ahead and wrap up the podcast. Where can people reach you at?
Well, I don't do any social media other than YouTube. I had to create a dummy account on Facebook just to help run the Lima Company Memorial Facebook page, but my YouTube page, youtube.com/SeanFlaherty, SeanFlaherty. That's my only real outlet, if you want to even call it social media. Memorial website, eyesoffreedom.org. Our Facebook is actually facebook.com/Lima Company Memorial. That's LIMA and then Company Memorial. And that Lima Company Memorial is also our YouTube page as well.
And then you can reach me at Gods on Safari on Twitter.
And what does that mean, by the way?
It's a Sun Ra record.
Really?
Sun Ra Orchestra record, yes.
Wow. Okay.
That went obscure, man.
I guess so.
And you can reach me there. And obviously, I post stuff to my buddy Joe's website, Parkscope, which you're going to be on if you're listening to this podcast.
Yep.
So until again, thanks for listening, and you'll hear from me shortly. Bye.